I want to read something to you before we begin this morning that I wrote in my journal early today. Here's what I wrote. Ed's sermon last night was a soul-stirring experience, a rare combination of reason and emotion. He took the subject of humanism to a new level. He made the philosophy of the excellence of man seem small and paltry. And then, with God's involvement, lifted man to the pinnacle of true prominence. It was a breath of fresh air and an edifying, lifting experience. If you did not hear that sermon, you need to get the CD or the tape, because it is a splendid, splendid lesson. I wanted to say that before I began. Now he'll have the big head all day long. We've been talking about marriage and what God had to say about it, and after all, He is the originator of marriage. And I want to talk with you today in a rather synthetic way of bringing all of these things together with synthesis to make sure that we tie up all the loose ends, and I think they all culminate in this one lesson, actually. And so I want to talk with you this morning in our time about growth in marriage. Growth in marriage. Growth is a proper and desirable ingredient in any relationship. Doesn't make any difference what you talk about. A friendship that does not grow, a friendship that is not propped up now and then. As Dr. Johnson said, you have to nail boards on friendship as you go along. And I think that's so. And it's so with the marriage. Especially significant in marriage is growth. A marriage that does not grow can't survive very much stuff. And when things come along that are detrimental to it, it will fold. It's one of those basic fundamental things that we talked about at the very beginning of our series, in which we laid the groundwork and made the fundaments the important consideration on which to build all of this. And then it must grow. I mean, it doesn't just sit on the foundation and stay there. You build on that foundation, and a marriage that does not grow cannot provide what it's supposed to provide. That is a good home for children, a haven for friends of the marriage partners, a respite from labor, a place for spiritual advancement especially. And a dormant marriage, furthermore, is a marriage that is vulnerable. A dormant marriage, one that doesn't have planks nailed on it and has been shored up and has grown and prospered, is a marriage that is vulnerable to attack. A marriage that does not grow then many times will find trouble. And so it's necessary that a marriage grow. I don't need to elaborate on that point very much, because it is an obvious kind of point that a marriage must grow. I want to cite for you three laws this morning. Before I do that, may I just say that my definition of a law is what is an expression by somebody who's empowered to dictate. Let me say that again. I believe that law is an expression by somebody who is empowered to dictate. Now, God is empowered to dictate what a marriage ought to be. And I want to cite these three laws that I believe are prominent in the marriage relationship. There is, first of all, the law of origin, I call it. The law of origin. In Matthew chapter 19 and verses 4 and 5, have you not read, Jesus said, that He which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. From the beginning has a special significance. It deals with the law of origin. And any time God speaks about marriage, I don't care where it is, you will find somewhere in it some kind of an expression of from the beginning language. And so the law of origin figures very prominently in the business of marriage. And mark this well. The law of origin means the man-woman relationship is special enough to God that He would make a perennial law to ensure its relationship for all time. Please mark that down. That's why we have from the beginning language. Moses, for the hardness of your hearts, tolerated the putting away, he said. But from the beginning it was not so. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. That is from the beginning language, or what God had in mind from the beginning. The second law I want to talk with you about, I call the law of harmony. The law of harmony. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2, Paul says, "Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband." There are no plurals in that. It is one man for one woman. And there's a basic difference between unison and harmony. He does not say one man for one man or one woman for one woman. This is a law of harmony, not a law of unison. When unison is being used, you sing the same notes. That's unison. Unison means being in agreement in exactly the same way. Singing exactly the same notes is a good illustration. While harmony means an agreement in combination. And so when I say there is a law of harmony, what I'm talking about is that everlasting principle of interlocking opposites that I spoke about earlier in the week. If you take C, E, G, and C, that makes a chord. A chord. A chord. C-H-O-R-D. If you get that out of focus, if you put an F in there where a G is supposed to be, you're going to have discord. Discord. And so please notice the comparison between our word accord and a chord of music. They're the same thing. It's the law of harmony at work. And so men and women are not in unison, they are in harmony. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. And again, the world in particular, mankind in particular, is constructed of these interlocking opposites. Defraud you not one another, except it be with consent for a season, he says, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman is of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And so we have these two laws. There is the law of origin and the law of harmony. The third of these I have already discussed with you. It is the law of order. The law of order. In this relationship of marriage, there is a law of order. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I have delivered them unto you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. God's law of order is unmistakable. It leaves absolutely no room for misunderstandings. The conclusion says that it's necessary to submit to your role, not as culture defines it, as we talked about yesterday, not as society defines it, not even as you subjectively define it, but it is necessary that you submit to your role as God has defined it in order for it to function at the peak level of its efficiency. Whether you're a husband or a wife or a child or whoever you are, you submit to God's law of order. Now, conclusions quickly. Marriage is a serious matter. And marriage ceremonies include should not be entered into lightly or inadvisedly. Boy, I wish I could get that across to people. Marriages do not respect the law of origin, the law of harmony, and the law of order are headed for trouble. Hear that again. If you don't respect the law of origin, how marriage came into being, if you don't respect the law of harmony, like God gave it, particularly as it relates to the conjugal responsibilities in marriage, and if you don't respect the law of order, then you're going to have trouble in your marriage. Respect for these laws then become the basis, the fundament on which the marriage relationship rests. Now, let me say to you that growth is a part of life. Growth is a part of life. We would be terribly concerned if our little babies came into the world and didn't grow. We would be certain, and with good reason. And we are shown with all kinds of passages in the New Testament how we are to grow, because spiritual growth actually is the essence of Christianity. Could I say something to you quickly? Our denominational friends have done us a great disservice by promoting the idea that salvation is a one-stroke process. Actually, the new birth is exactly and precisely that. It's a birth. It is never intended to be the life. It is intended to be the introduction to the life. It is a birth, and you're born of water and the Spirit in order that you might begin to develop the character of the new man. And then you become all that God wants you to become. It's a matter of growing then. Christianity is restricted only by the growth that it does not make. So spiritual growth is the essence of Christianity. We are bound to thank God for you always, said Paul to the Thessalonians, as it is meet, because your faith groweth exceedingly, and the charity of every one of you, the love of every one of you toward each other aboundeth. If these things be in you and abound, they make you that you shall neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But he that lacketh these things is blind and cannot see afar off, and hath forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. Wherefore, the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. Desire the sincere milk of the Word, that you may grow thereby. But grow in grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. 2 Peter 3:18. Jesus condemned the fig tree in Matthew 21 because it produced no fruit. It did not grow to fruition. It did not grow to maturity and perfection. So spiritual growth is a part of Christianity. Marriages must grow or they lose their dynamic. They lose their dynamic, and when they do, they become stale. They become dull without any enthusiasm. Dull marriages make open doors for the devil. That's just the way that is. So failure to grow may well be the single most contributing factor to unhappy marriages. I don't want to overstate that, but I do want you to see that it is a real possibility that if a marriage gets dull or stale, it opens the door for the devil. Has your love for one another in your marriage increased, or has it decreased? Now, you think about that. Or is it just static, just staying stale? I told my wife not too long ago on the advent of an anniversary, if I knew how little I loved you when I married you, I might not have married you. The fact is, it has grown that much, you see, and it ought to grow that way. And please hear me carefully. Erotica should eventually be replaced by agapeo. It ought to be a higher kind of love, a more noble kind of love. That is not to say that you don't have passion for one another. That isn't the point at all. But the dominant love in a marriage relationship is that agape kind of love. Do you think you're a better husband than when you were first married? Or a better wife? Are you doing well in that regard? Are you a better... Norma has made me a better person. I know that's hard for you to believe. But it's just a fact. I was pretty poor. P-O-R-E, poor, when I first married. She has helped me a lot. And boy, have I helped her. Have you? And do you constantly seek for ways to make the marriage grow? If you have not, you have contributed to the marriage becoming stale and uninteresting. And you need to make a conscious effort to make your marriage grow. Well, how can you make a marriage grow? How do you do that? Well, there are two ways. You grow as a husband and you grow as a wife. Shall we stand and sing? I mean, that's what it's all about. You grow as a husband. It all begins with you. In the first place, husbands, listen to me carefully. Take control of your role. Be a spiritual head. We gripe about secular feminism, and we gripe about religious feminism, and we gripe about the encroachments of feminism into the church. And well, we might, but we have allowed it, husbands have. Many times we have abdicated our role, and because of that, there is an open door for the devil again. And so we have problems. So take control of your role. Husbands, love your wives, he says, right? Wrong. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. That's your role. In verses 28 and 29 of chapter 5, and I quoted verse 25, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. Make it your marriage and nobody else's. I tell you, a lot of marriages have been hampered by somebody's interference. And you as the husband have the responsibility. As your headship, as the head of the family, you have the responsibility of seeing that there are no intrusions from the outside. In Proverbs chapter 5 and verses 18 and 19, there's an interesting passage. And I don't have to elaborate on this. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hand and pleasant roll. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished also always with her love. And why wilt thou, O son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the way of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all things. Marriage, ladies and gentlemen, must learn to function in all areas of life. And we need to make it our marriages as husbands. We need to treat our wives as special, as somebody that belongs to me, like my body belongs to me. That's what Jesus had in mind when he said that in Matthew chapter 5, or caused Paul to do that. I further suggest to you that marriages must learn to function in all areas of life. When the springs come and the blossoms are in full bloom, and the winds waft gently through our lives, we must have strong marriages. In the summer or middle years, when the days are long and hot and life is filled with long days of intensity and much labor, we must have a strong persuasion about our husband's role in the marriage relationship. In the fall, which comes to warn us of winter and offers new colors and hues to the marriage, and when the winter comes and there is trouble and bad weather, but a warm place to stay as well, we must be ready in all parts. Marriage is not just for the spring, it's for all time. And it ought to get better as it starts in the spring and blooms and then moves to the summer and works and then moves to the fall and becomes colorful and then moves to the winter time when there is respite from the labor and when there is a high and warm feeling of what has been accomplished. As you spend yourself physically in marriage and get less and less physically able, you should get more and more spiritually disposed to the love and honor that ought to be in the marriage. Husbands, impress your wife with your love for her. Do something. Love is never inactive. It's always working. Love is never neutral. I wish I could get husbands to see that. I told her I loved her when I married her. And I said, if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. That stinks. That just stinks is all that is. And the fact of the matter is, you need to read Solomon's admonition in chapter 7 of the song. There's much to be said for romantic conversation. It stirs the soul as well as the body and brings freshness to the sexual union. And that will be a prominent part of your marriage early on. Marriages that have an amount of humor. You need humor in the marriage relationship. I tell you, Norma laughs at me a lot. We got a lot of humor in our marriage. She laughed at me just this week when I put on the wrong tie. And you remember all about that, I think. The main ingredient in a good marriage, after all, is love. And love and growth are the same thing because love never stands still. Listen to me about love. Love is elastic. Love is elastic. The more you love, the more you increase your capacity to love. And the bigger your love gets, the more you can love. And so what a joy to start out here with just a little balloon and get the thing to grow and grow and grow until such a time as it's a huge kind of thing and you can still love, you can still add to it, you can still have some more love in the head of you. Learn the joy, husbands. Yes, I said the joy of forbearance and tolerance. Tolerance and forbearance are acts of love that they show. Love suffereth long and is kind. Patience. Learn the art of appreciation of patience. Say it. Encourage her. Plan enjoyment and pleasure, including sex. Stop waiting for it to just happen. Plan stuff. Make her happy. Take the lead in showing compassion. Let her see your care for others and she will care more for you. Romans 13:7-8. Render therefore to all their dues. Tribute to whom tribute. Honor to whom honor, custom to whom custom, owe to no man, yet to love one another, for he that loveth hath fulfilled the law. Where love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is fulfillment of the law. Make a plan to show how that you can personally make the marriage better. And you can. Listen. And listen more with, don't just listen with your ears. Listen with your hands and with your eyes and with all of your being. Lean forward when she says something. Don't wait for her to do that. That's the way I'm working on that. I'm really working on it. And she's getting my attention more and more all the time. Hear what she says. Hear what she says, and you will likely respond positively to what you hear. And that's what makes marriages better. Decide to give grace. Now, there are all kinds of fancy definitions for grace. I mean, we talk about grace being unmerited favor or the gift of God. Could I tell you my little simplistic definition of grace? Grace is how God feels about us no matter what our condition is. Grace is how God feels about us. He loves us in spite of our warts. That's true grace. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Be courteous. Be pitiful. Whatever happened to courtesy in marriage? We need to be nice to our ladies and help them. And so, one of the ways that you can make a marriage grow, and I hope you got this as we went along, is to grow yourself. The marriage won't grow if you don't grow as a husband. And wives, you need to grow. You need to, first of all, just exactly like the husbands, take control of your role. It's your role. It's your responsibility. Yea, it is your privilege. It is your joy. It's what God intended. And if you do what God intended, there is bound to be a wonderful end to it. Enjoy seeing it work. Enjoy watching your role work. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands. Right? Wrong. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife. Right? Wrong. The husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Learn the satisfaction, the peace, the quiescence that can come from being a good wife. If you're a good wife or a good husband, it just brings an inner peace. It just makes you feel good about who you are and what you are, and you may not have a whole lot. A good marriage is not dependent on how much you have. A good marriage is dependent on what you are. It's dependent on how you view yourself, what kind of person you see yourself as. With honesty and integrity, if you view yourself as a good husband, you'll be happy. If you view yourself as a good wife, you'll be quiet and nice, and you'll be entirely satisfied with where you are. Secondly, it sounds like an insult, but I want to say to you that one of the things that you can do as a wife to make the marriage good is be a woman. Don't try to be a man. Be a woman. God made you like that. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, if any obey not the word, that they may also be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. We use this passage so much to talk about immodest apparel that we forget the point of the passage. That's a secondary thing. He's talking about how you live in subjection to your husband. And here's your adorning, he says. Not the plaiting of the hair. He's not saying you shouldn't clean up and look pretty. He's not saying that. But he says your first adorning, your main adorning, let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament. And you talk about an ornament on a woman. Even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. You talk about a woman that is confident in her womanhood, you have a thing of beauty. Listen to me. When a woman is adorned in the frocks and frills of femininity, when she is dressed up like she's supposed to be as a woman, when she has made all of the preparations to make herself what she ought to be, whose adorning is a meek and quiet spirit, there is not anything more beautiful in the world than a woman who's right. But there's not anything worse than one that's not. And so be aware of the fact that if you adorn yourself with a meek and quiet spirit, you will present to your husband something really special, and he will stand and hold you in his hand and show you to the world and say to them, "This is my woman. What a joy. This is my wife." Be worthy of his trust and confidence. Be his woman. Be his companion. Be his lover. Be his builder. Be His confidant. Be His listener. Be His advisor, His mentor, His entertainment, His loving, caring critic. Look for opportunities to say, I love you. And I'm not talking just about out loud. Sometimes the best I love yous are not actually said. And please be advised that it's easier than you might think. And listen to me, wives. You're not giving yourself up when you say, I love you. Most of the time, men are just hairy-legged. That's about all you can say about them. They don't have any romantic tendencies to speak of. And we go through life just kind of plodding along like an old plow horse. It's up to you to bring out the stuff that you can bring out. And that's why God made you. That's a part of your helpmeetedness. It's a part of who you are. If you say, I love you, what's He going to say? Well, I sure am glad. No, He's not going to do that. He's going to turn right around and He's going to hold your hand, your face in His hands and say, I love you too. Sometimes you just have to admit, you have to initiate it. And so, say I love you in all kinds of different ways. Find ways to have to give Him a healthy self-respect. Prop your guy up. Boy, my wife has been so good about that, and have I ever needed some propping? Somebody gets on your case and they just wear you out. She'll come along and she'll put her hand on your shoulder and she'll say, it's okay, honey. We got me and you. And that's all that matters. Encourage him. Heal his bruised ego. Heal his wounded pride. Prop up his damaged self-esteem. And for goodness sake, if you can possibly avoid it, don't correct him in public unless it's something deserving of the chance you're taking. That is a serious problem right there. If it's not something that's really important, just don't correct. It's not your place to do that. And you make him look bad. Let all things be done unto edifying. 2 Corinthians 14:26. I want to give you some other quick things, wives. Listen to him. He may be crying out in ways that you're not hearing. Read between the lines. Try to see what he's really saying. Love him in spite of his warts. Love is like that. It won't tolerate wrong or countenance untruth, but it certainly will quickly condemn foibles and inadequacies. It won't quickly condemn foibles and inadequacies and idiosyncrasies. Stand by your man. That was a principle before it was ever a song. Remember, he won't always look like he did when you met him. But neither will you. Let him cry. Let him cry. In fact, help him cry. Grown men do sometimes cry. How often is it the case that love is intensified and solidified out of adversities? Crying together brings a melding effect to a marriage. Reach out and touch him. Reach out and touch him. Touching is such a vital part of marriage. Not just the sensual touching. I'm talking about the small, seemingly insignificant acts of holding hands or walking arm in arm or leaning on one another or just some time or the other just walking up and just touching. The couple that does not spontaneously engage in such simple touching actions may not have anyone to lean on when things get bad. So touch. I think hugging's good for the soul anyway. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Keep it to yourself. Criticism that is broadcast to third parties seldom does little to reconcile differences. In fact, it very often deepens the hurt and widens the breach. So best be careful with your criticisms and don't tell anybody. And as we pointed out in the lesson on Tuesday, fuss carefully. Don't make threats or give ultimatums. You might have to follow through. And don't let your language get out of hand. Insults are hard to take back, even after you're reconciled. And watch out for exaggerations. Expressions like, you always do that, or you don't ever do that, or you're not... Don't do that. Do you see that you become little more than a prostitute when you withhold your sexual favors from your husband because you're mad at him? Be careful. Give him some space. Give him some space. It's good that husbands sometimes have hobbies that wives don't like. Let him loose once in a while. He needs to roam around the ninth hole. Brother, do I roam around those holes. Enjoy the changes with him. I think this may be one of the really strong points I want to make, and that is to enjoy the changes with him. There will be always new things to enjoy in the changes in marriage. When you move to middle life, even in the later years, there are parts to enjoy. But you have to look for them. You have to find them. I was thinking as we were coming today, Ed's moving to a new condo on the beach where he lives in Ponte Vedra. That's going to be a change. But he's looking forward to it. We just had a sunroom added to our house. And we're going to, it's going to be finished when we get home. And we're going to hope, we're going to hold hands and look at that and say, we did that. And I mean, we've been married 44 years and here we are enjoying some kind of a change. Don't you see that? Don't you see that changes are a part of what we are and that we ought to enjoy them? And sometimes changes are good for us. Solomon was so within the mark when he said, in the day of prosperity, rejoice. In the day of adversity, consider. That's what makes marriages grow. Find those things with him. Admire those things with him and express yourself. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to shed a tear and say, didn't God bless us? Aren't we a blessed people? What's wrong with that? Admire those things with him. Enjoy those things with him. Well, that's our series, Making Marriage Work. I want to leave you with three quick points that are the synthesis of all that we've said. What we've done is analysis, break apart. Now let's do the sensitive and put together again. It doesn't take long to do it. First, from the beginning means just that. That God had a design for marriage from the beginning. It's up to you to make sure that His plan is your plan for marriage. One man for one woman for life. Number two, making marriage work is a full-time, lifetime job. It doesn't happen accidentally. It requires hard work and diligence. Never stop building. Add on. Remodel, repair, refurbish, remember together. And thirdly, love is the basis for all that God does. It motivates His every action. Marriage is based on love. His love, your love, His or her love. Love, as our brother has pointed out, never fails. God bless you and thank you.